Hey friends, welcome to the Rhythms for Life podcast, where each week we talk about four rhythms that help you reduce stress and anxiety and take charge of your emotional health. Rest, restore, connect, create.
These ideas come from Rebecca's best-selling book, Rhythms of Renewal, Trading Stress and Anxiety for a Life of Peace and Purpose. So grab your copy, invite your friends, and let's live in rhythm.
Hi, I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Gabe, and we are so glad you're with us this week.
Week four of being home.
Being home. I feel like I've been home for 4 years at this point.
Week four times 10.
I know. It's hard to hear you through your mask, Rebecca.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So today we are so, so excited to share this.
Making out through a mask. That's been difficult too. I don't know how you guys are doing it. So if you've got any tips, feel free to
making out through a mask. Thanks,
leave them
Gabe.
For us.
I'm sure that's a visual they don't need.
Well, we know that this has been a long several weeks and all of us are a little stir crazy and we just are thankful that you're sticking with it. I mean, this is one of those moments that's challenging your mental health, your emotional health, your physical health, your spiritual health. Everything we've been talking about, Rebecca, for 8 months with Rhythms of Renewal is being put to the test. And it's been exciting to see how many people have learned to incorporate these rhythms quickly.
Right. It's the time to apply it, right? We've got some time on our hands. And that's part of the reason we had a hard time living in rhythm, you know, for the last several years, because we just don't have any margin or capacity to do it. And now we've got all this time on our hands. And yes, a lot of us obviously are still working and just trying to navigate, though, the days that we have in front of us. Have to really be thoughtful on what do we want to gain from the season.
Yeah, and today we're excited about our guest. We recorded this back before we were in this crisis, the quarantine moment, but it's Miles Adcox, and he's the CEO of Onsite Workshops, which is a world-renowned workshop center that helps people work through therapy, counseling, marriage therapy, personal counseling. It's just an amazing therapeutic center. And so it's such a gift, I think, during this moment to hear from him, his perspective on how we can process our emotions well.
Yes. And this is a center that's lovely, beautiful, located about an hour west of Nashville. And so most people do come on site. That's why it's called on site. But what's awesome is they have adjusted their way of doing this experiential learning workshop, and they're doing it remotely now online.
Yeah, they're offering an online living-centered program. It's a four-day world-renowned workshop designed to help you bring your life back to center and connect your current or past experiences with how they affect you today. And I know if you're like us, this is a moment where we're processing a lot of things. It's a unique moment. It's not going to last forever. So if you want to take advantage of that, check them out at onsiteworkshops.com.
Most people have to take a vacation week to travel to Nashville to do this experience for a week. And this is an opportunity and a rare experience to be able to do it right where you are, where you probably already have a little extra time and you don't have to travel. And because it's all day intensives, you're still going to get that same feedback. You're going to get that high intensity feedback, a deep dive, going all in for 4 days.
And so one of the cool things, we talked to Miles and he said he's up for giving away a free workshop. It's a $2,000 workshop. I mean, this is expensive. It's really intense. Some of the greatest therapists in the world, but we're going to give one away. Tell them how they can participate.
Yes. So I have all the details at my Instagram for you to enter today. It's just at Rebecca Lyons is my handle on Instagram and Facebook, R-E-B-E-K-A-H-L-Y-O-N-S. So go there, enter, we'll announce the winner on Thursday.
So let's listen in now to our conversation with Miles. We really wanted to hear from him about creatives and how artists that he works with, which he works with a lot of artists, how unique their minds are. And I know, Rebecca, this kind of fits your profile pretty well. So people are going to get to know a little bit better you in this process, but also how we can learn about how our minds work, how our hearts work, the importance of connection and relationship. Let's listen in now to Miles Adcox.
Hey, Miles. I'm so glad you're here. Thanks for being on the podcast.
I'm excited to be here.
You had us out. Do you remember a few months back with Lindsay? And I probably ate the best feast I have ever had in my entire life. And it was like at noon on a Monday.
It was healing.
It was.
It was great.
I'm ready to come back.
In a couple hours.
No, I love everything about that. One thing that you do outside of the realm of on-site is you do some direct counseling, coaching for people. And you mentioned that it's a lot of it is in the artist space. I want to dig into that. Being the Enneagram 4 that I am.
I love just 4 so much.
Thank you. See, Gabe, 4s are awesome. Yeah. No, I'm kidding. Gabe's very supportive of my emo until it tends to take over. So it's not just a 4. It's just anyone that's in this creative work, vocational work, that all of a sudden, that like, if the pain stops, the work dries up. You know, help us understand a little bit more about people who are out there that might feel that conflicted voice and not how to get healthy and settle with that.
Yeah, there's a backstory, which I'll try to tell it and make it quick, and then there's a why I value working with the creative, and then there's a how, which is how I've seen it effective to be able to embrace people who are wired. I do believe that everybody's creative. I just think it, unfortunately, a lot of us get boxed in early on, which is what happened to me. I grew up in a small town in the South, which I'm so proud of my hometown. It's a wonderful community, and I got a lot of amazing things there, but we didn't have a lot of creative influence or outlet in our education system. And so I had a creative voice that was screaming to come out early, but I knew it wasn't socially accepted. And I was so desperate for social acceptance at the time that I just became what I needed to be in order to get outside or external validation. And for me, that was, if you grow up in the South and you're an athlete and an outdoorsman, then you're doing something right. And so I became that, embodied it. And I was fortunate to be good at those things. And I do love them, but there was always a counterbalance that felt lost, and there was a part of my voice that never got to come out until it had to. And that's usually what happens with the creative voice. It gets to a point where if you haven't used it or exercised it, it has to. Yeah. And when it did for me, now I'm putting it through this outlet. I've always felt like I owed a debt of service to the creatives because I grew up in an amazing, wonderful family who we didn't do emotions well. So in a sense, I'd say we probably were emotionally kind of illiterate. We just wouldn't know a feeling if it hit us in the face. And so we didn't talk about that. And so therefore, as a hypersensitive, creative guy who didn't show the world that piece, I had a lot of feelings and emotions and didn't know how to process them, which is really common. What helped me process my emotions first was music and film. And so I remember one of the first times as a young adult that I cried was alone listening to a song. And same thing. And I still, to this day, I can get lost in a really good movie. I love, and I wish they weren't even branded as this, but they are chick flicks, because I think if more men engage that part of themselves, you would get what I get out of that, which I get a really good cry in good movies.
I love it.
And now I'm not ashamed of that. I'm proud of it. But because there was a time in my life where I wasn't able to process feelings and emotions, and this became an outlet that gave me permission to, I thought, I want to be a part of the creative's journey from now forward and give them back what they gave me, which is, if I can help give them emotional health and optimize what they do, I think they can change the world. And they do.
Right.
You do. I know you're a game changer for a lot of people. But I have seen that creatives don't often get a seat around the table in major decisions. It comes through education and politics and business and places that are a little bit more well-funded. But I think culture is going to shift through the lens of creators when they know they have the voice to help it do so. We're seeing it happen in faith and in other places. But that's why I want to pour into them. And it's a long answer, but here's the how. So that's the why, is I'm personally invested, and I've seen the more we've engaged in creative communities, because on-site, I think 40%+ of our business is music.
Wow.
Whether it's our, and it started with more of the mainstream genres, like country because of geography, but then into pop, and now the Christian music community is just a big part of our audience, which has been amazing. But I learned something in working with these creatives that I call the creative's dilemma. And ultimately, it's most creatives that create want their art to be distributed to the world in some way that it would travel most.
Yes.
And so therefore, you try to curate a platform, you try to create something and make it public in a sense. Well, there's this interesting dilemma that I've seen, that public professions create abnormal life circumstances.
Right.
And abnormal life circumstances create high levels of stress. Unaddressed stress creates loneliness, anxiety, broken relationships, depressions, addictions, et cetera, all of which kill creativity.
Exactly.
So what's fascinating is what brought you to the dance, your superpower, in some ways you're signing up for a career that's designed to kill it.
Wow.
And I call that the creative's dilemma. And I've been working on some curriculum that I'm taking into some labels and other places and working with some of their talent. And I sit with a group of artists once a month that are working on their first single and doing radio tour to selling out arenas and everything in between. And it's, and we work off that curriculum. It's like, how do we turn this dilemma into an opportunity? And that's what's interesting. I found that it's only a dilemma when you don't know about it. But there's not a lot of people behind the scenes, whether you're publishing a book or an album, or you're getting ready to launch somebody out of a cannon with millions of dollars behind them to make them successful and take them to the world, they usually don't tell you this. They say you're wired this way, you're susceptible to this, and here's what is probable that it could happen, and it doesn't have to.
Right. Is it partly because the vocational rhythm of a creative is such an outlier to most of culture? It's not a 9-to-5 Monday through Friday and kind of planned and predictable. I know for me personally, I'm a musician. Well, I do sing alto, but I do not get paid for it. Let's put it that way. But for even my work as a writer, that has also yielded me having to be traveling more than I ever thought I would and teaching. And that happens to fall on a Friday night, Saturday morning. No mom wants to be gone when her kids are home from school on a weekend. I can only imagine people who have a vocation that requires them to go and still maintain relationships in that family unit. That's a stress. That's something that we've 7 years in, 8 years in now, have had to really work through and create some healthy boundaries. How do you help some of these artists navigate life on the road, isolation, you know, just being lonely?
Well, you just called attention to some of the components of what makes it abnormal. And if you were to sit in front of a bunch of creatives and say, what's abnormal about your profession? You just named some of it. It's an unusual schedule. You're hyper available to people all the time because they feel like you're their best friend in some ways. And we could go on and on and on. But I usually like three principles. And these are things that I use in terms of trying to create the right rhythms too, which is reflection, restoration, and rest. And if I can support people in doing those three things and doing them consistently, then I see that it helps them create not just a platform to distribute and deliver their art, but a platform to hold their faith and emotional wellness intact.
Right.
And in my way of looking at that, because I know those aren't necessarily new, is reflection is self-awareness. So stay curious about how your story is impacting you and the people around you. And there's ways to do that, not through a shame-based lens once you do a little work. And then the second one, restoration, is my version of that is doing the work. That's when you excavate, offload stress, take times to do that. And that's where you have to get creative. And that's why creatives who are really busy on-site, our program is a great option because often they don't have the ability living on the road to do individual counseling once a week or every other week. So they can do some of that, but when they're off, and they usually are off the road, so I know this so well because it's Sunday through Wednesday, is we'll set up a four-day intensive for them to be able to do what we hope is like 6 to 8 months of therapy in a short amount of time, focused time, works well for creatives. Restoration to me is doing the work, and I do it. That's how I, you know, once a year, I do two programs at Onsite a year, and I do two outside of it a year, where I excavate, offload, and then restore me to the best version of myself. And then rest, to be honest, if you do the first two well, rest actually comes pretty easy. It's surprising. I say easy. It's never easy in our culture. But when you can untether who you are from what you do, the priority of it goes way up. When people come to our program, you have some anonymity with your profession. So nobody reveals a profession while they're there, which really is neat. It equals the playing field. Rare to sit in front of other successful professionals that you may know by face, but that the whole time you just know them as a human being. And we keep that firm, that guideline, that if you recognize someone by what they do, that you would not approach them based on that, which happens is we've got public people there, you know, almost every week. But also everybody else gets to be a human being, you know, regardless of your profession. So, yeah, I think those three have helped me significantly and a lot of other creatives.
Well, I love how for you, those intensives are a rhythm. Those are just a rhythm that aren't going away for sustained health. And I think with writing the book on rhythms, it was just this resolution, you know, that we have this New Year's resolution that's like, I'm going to change something dramatic. But the problem is the rhythms actually are what invite you into something that's already going to happen. It's going to come back around and come back around. There's no, it's not like, oh, I went to counseling 10 years ago. It's like, no, I'm actually having a rhythm of health. And I love what you said about rest follows, almost like it's like an afterthought because you are more restful. You're less restless internally. So you're able to actually enjoy and embrace that rhythm of rest. Awesome. I know for me, with the things that are unusual, I subconsciously do the things you were talking about. Like most mornings I'm up journaling and just trying to brain dump, you know, just whatever it is that I'm trying to hold internally or intention. And then as it gets out, making sense of it, trying to process and reflect. And so I love how just the intentionality of choosing to do that will help.
Do you deal with stress and anxiety throughout your day? Or do you find yourself on your phone constantly or checking it as the first thing you do right when you wake up? Well, stop checking your phone, stop checking social media, and instead open the Abide app. It'll ease your mind, and it's the number one Christian meditation app. Abide users report less stress, lower levels of anxiety and depression, and better sleep. And couldn't we all use better sleep? So start your day with Abide's daily meditation. It's based on biblical scripture, and these audio meditations will center you and draw you closer to Christ. For a limited time, our listeners will get 25% off a premium subscription when you visit abide.co/life. That's abide.co/life. So get started now with 25% off a premium subscription by downloading the Abide app at abide.co/life. You'll get additional stories and meditations, premium music, soothing sounds, and more. That's abide, abide.co/life to download the Abide app and get 25% off your premium subscription. Miles, talk a little bit about your perspective on the idea of an intensive, like you said, for an artist, 6 to 8 months worth of therapy in 4 days. That's really attractive to somebody like me who's busy and it almost feels really drawn out to go once a week or once every couple weeks to a therapist. This could take a year to work through something. And I know there's certain personalities may be drawn to it, but what have you seen the value of this intensive, like, let's go there, let's go deep, let's go quick versus the slow process? I know you're a fan of both, but talk about the dynamic to that intensive.
I'm glad you said that because I am a fan of both and certainly not picking on my profession because the lion's share of our offering, the mental health offering, is the 1 hour session or the hour and a half session. Although it's changing, it's starting to trend where people are doing longer sessions and they're starting to see because I think it can feel like whiplash to come out of the pace of culture or life, come into a curated environment where you get open and real and then get jerked right back into the pace of life. And it's of value, but I think we don't often get an opportunity to ask the right questions. And therefore, we end up prescribing what I see as kind of surface self-care options. The good news is self-care right now is trending. Everybody's talking about it. It's exciting. Wellness is trending. Emotional health is trending. It's a fun time to be in our space. But sometimes I think we miss the depth. For instance, the rest component, that gets prescribed every day, almost everybody. You just need more balance. You just need more rest. But we underestimate that if it were that easy, people would be doing it. And we don't know how to do it. So what's the message that's underneath the message? It's underneath the message that might have you rooted in an inability to execute that. Same thing happens at work with a lot of people. And I struggle with this myself, with getting over it. Identified with my profession, which creates workaholism. And I really have struggled with that. And I've supported a lot of people with it. And I never ask people what's wrong at work if you're working too much. I say, what's missing from home? And so you usually have more time to ask the right questions, which is usually one level in an intensive experience.
Yeah. And also men coming to counseling or intensives, you know, just on behalf of the men listening to this podcast, I know Rebecca, there's a lot of women that follow and read her books. I know I've been deeply impacted by reading and learning from her story. It's brought me into this conversation, but I realize for a lot of men, they don't always know where to start. They don't always know how to get into these conversations until there's some intense tragedy of decision-making or, you know, an addiction that just gets so out of control, their whole life is falling apart. And then they start to pay attention to some of the trauma and things that they never dealt with. What have you found in your work with men in this process
that would encourage some of those listening that, hey, start right where you're at. Like, all of us need to probably go down this path of looking backwards, of healing, and why that's so important in our society today that we give men that space.
You're speaking to something that I'm so passionate about, and I think it could change our world the more we could engage. I think women are ahead of us again. There's no doubt they're emotionally smarter, but they also engage in a program like what we offer more than men, almost, you know, 70-30 in some seasons. So I think it's starting to change a little bit more. We're getting more men to engage, which is really nice. But I think I think it's part on us, mental health professionals, in that we've communicated and branded this in the wrong way. I don't think we've been very smart about how we're falling right into the scarcity model of cultural norms that keep men stuck, safe, and in hiding by saying, this is where you go when something's really wrong. That is a myth. It's not true, if I could tell every man I know. And you don't have to lose your man card. I am still a man's man, and there are different parts of me, but I still love to hunt. I fish, I watch football, whatever your man definition of man's man. But I also am sensitive, and I have emotions, and I cry, and I like to shout. There's different things about me. Once I got in touch with the whole self, it made me twice the husband, twice the father, twice the leader. Yeah. That's the good news. And it doesn't have to start with go jump into a big counseling session. That may take some time. Just change your narrative and conversation. Have a different conversation with another guy and go one level deeper. And see, I'd love to challenge everybody to see what that feels like. Because if you think about it, which is the part of the brain that would probably keep you from going there to begin with, then that seems scary and not useful to our survival. But just give it a go. Because what I have seen is it ends up being the most useful part of the best relationships I have with other men. Mm. And it's not near as scary as you think.
You do that, babe. You're leading a men's group every Tuesday.
I find there's just such a hunger amongst men for this type of conversation in a lot of places, and they're finding fewer places and spaces to do it. And it's not only a conversation about emotional health, but just in general about life. I mean, I read an article recently that was describing the mental health epidemic in our country, and when it pointed to men, and as you know from all the data, we have the deaths of despair happening between the 35 and 55 year old. It tends to be white males, I think 7 out of 10, that are the ones succumbing to depression or suicide, alcohol, you know, liver disease, opioid addiction. And one of the points that was made was that men have forgotten how to play. That, you know, you grow up playing and that's okay. Like, I played golf as a kid. I played a backyard football every day. I mean, I was out in the woods almost every day with my brother. We were constantly active. We were playing. We were doing these types of things. And then you become an adult and you're supposed to go to work 60 hours a week. You're supposed to provide. There's no time for play. Play's for people who don't have a job. You know, what would you say about the aspect of play being so important, not just to men, also to women, but for men to maybe start to reinvigorate some of those hobbies, some of those things that get lost when you only see yourself as a producer and not necessarily somebody worthy of just playing?
I'm so glad you brought it up, because I think that was a wise way to make it digestible. I think I get so passionate about it, I could even hear my voice picking up, because I want to sell it to men because I've seen the value. But the reality is, if I scale it back, I still get nervous at times, and I still fight cultural norms about, I work in the space and have done a lot of my own work, and it still feels unnatural to me. If you're somebody out there that's listening and you're like, that guy's, you know, I can't relate to it. The truth is even when I go do work, I struggle to take off from, you know, when I would say go do work, when I go do therapeutic work, I struggle to disconnect and untether from my profession. I struggle to do a digital detox and turn my phone off. So all that, the struggle doesn't change. It's just ultimately we change our relationship with the struggle and have better tools. But the play part, because we're constantly tweaking and trying to innovate our schedule out there. When we have people, whether it's for 4 days or 7 days, we do a whole series of different workshop offerings, and every minute counts. And we're constantly, I'm sure you guys do a lot of events and cool things, so I know you really curate those minutes. They're so important. We do the same thing, and it's so hard for me to schedule time to let it breathe and for play, because and it's counterintuitive. But that's what we do at night. Thankfully, I've got a lot of people around me much smarter than I am that remind me of the value of that. And that ends up showing up on our evaluations. not night two or three, because night two or three, people are like, oh, we shouldn't be having game night. We should be doing something with this time. But by the end, that ends up being one of their most, one of the most life-changing parts is once we stop programming around four or five, we, from fire pits to game nights to, it's all social, it's fun, it's play, and it's so valuable.
Part of the point of play is it takes us back to our youth where we, before we learn to be afraid, possibly, or inhibited, you know, we just kind of had that free expression of who we were more aware of who we were as kids as we are as adults. Mm-hmm. And play is a reminder of that. I write that chapter in this last book on permission to play. And it was all about a retreat that we were leading at Lost Valley that was supposed to be for marriage. But honestly, I overcame a chronic fear and a need to control on a horse because I finally felt the freedom to let go and just embrace the lope and realize that the right lope is when you don't control, like play and control cannot coexist. So I think as adults, we have to control everything at work because we have measurables and outcomes and up and to the right, yet play and control cannot work together. And so even in parenting, as my kids are getting older, Gabe is so fun for them. And I think a lot of dads can tune back in that play part. The moms, on the other hand, can't always do that. And you know, dishes got to get done and food's got to be on the table and then laundry and blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, I'm not being fun to my family and I'm not fun to myself. So that's the holistic healing. That's like the part of the picture, I think, that is unlocked when we do that. And Gabe's been great at doing that. I love that we're talking about men. I want to jump in from this topic of play to camp. You guys bought a camp, which to me says play. So tell me a little bit more about the vision behind that. You and Bob and Maria and your wife all went in on this. What is that for?
It's, as with most things I've done with Bob, it's a whimsical, crazy idea that I'm both excited about and being like, what were we thinking? But for the most part, I'm excited. I'm carrying both of those tensions. You know, I do that with every new venture I'm a part of, but this one particularly, it was kind of as our friendship has evolved, and it's a unique, unusual friendship. I mean, we're on paper, we shouldn't be as close as we are because we're very different. You know, Bob is just like, he's Patch Adams, and I'm more reserved and laid back. And we really are a good counterbalance to one another. And I didn't expect that. I met Bob, was inspired by him, clearly, it's hard not to be, and thought that's probably, I'll be a friend, but never a close friend. And then we were on a mountain at his place in Canada one time. And I think it was him or it was me. One of us said something and the other one said, I feel the same way. And it was, he was talking to me. He said, you must have and know so many people so well and so deep based on what you do. And I said, you know, this was 6 years ago. I said, I have a lot of acquaintances, but not many close friends. And he said, me too. And so we looked at each other and it's like, well, let's see if we can change that. Let's start with each other. And so this unlikely friendship has developed. And ultimately, I know a lot of stuff about Bob that not a lot of people do. He knows a lot of stuff about me that not a lot of people do. And we've held that tension and space for one another well. So this was a professional and personal merger of interesting goals. And so for Bob, it was, I am running all over the country, speaking a million times a year. And now I've got a grandbaby and I want to be home. And I like what you've created on site where you can go deliver what you deliver, but it's in one spot and it's 40 minutes from your house. So, and for me, my wife is born and raised in Southern California. Her family's there. We've got two kids now. We want our kids to be in both our grandparents' lives. And that's part of it. But also, California's been a great market for on-site over the years. We have a lot of people coming in from both Northern and Southern California. And we've had a lot of interest over the years of, would you ever do something out here? And so I've been looking for years, just as if we ever went anywhere, it would probably be London or California or two of our hotspots. And I was considered, but then when you tied, California seems like it makes sense, personally and professionally, let's pursue it. And then, of course, if you would ask me, are you ready to do something like that? I would have been like, no chance. We're 3 years out before we're financially available to do something like that, before personally we're ready. And then this dream just fell right in our lap, and as it goes. And right. It was almost like every obstacle that I saw, God just was like, nope, he removed it. And so I just kept saying yes and moving towards it. And now I will say, as far as the camp, I love what we do, and what we do is largely branded at OnSite in the therapeutic or counseling world. And I think there's an advantage there and there's a disadvantage there. And I want to take the information that I've seen and that we have, that kind of radical, untethered grace and clinical sophistication, and be able to put it in other places. And to me, camp is whimsical. It's fun. Retreats. I want to start offering leadership trainings around emotional intelligence and other things that we do a little bit at OnSite, but we just don't have the inventory to do it. And plus, I've had a huge dream of emotional health education with kids. And so we're going to try to interrupt the camp model a little bit and put a little bit more of that into it.
I love it.
Yeah, I think so many of our kids are in desperate need of space to process their emotions, anxiety, and I know that comes out of your own story where you just didn't feel like you had a place. You were kind of steeped in a religious type culture where those kinds of feelings weren't given permission. So the fact that now you could go back and start to create space for that so that kids growing up in those environments now go, hey, this is normal. There's a place. I don't have to go to therapy necessarily, but I get to go to camp and we're going to have some really deep conversations about my world, about what I'm feeling, about what I'm trying to take control of, and you're going to just be able to help them in such a great way. So I love that you guys are doing that.
Well, thank you. When I had kids, and I'm new to this, it changed everything because I stopped looking at it through the lens of how would I want to serve you and your family to what opportunities do I hope my kids have to engage in. And if they're not out there, I want to create them. And this will be an opportunity to do some of that.
Well, there's very few middle spaces where parents with teenagers, I mean, we talk to them all the time. We have three teenagers and we have a kindergartner, but we are always having these conversations where teens are in these really difficult places. And this is in some ways brand new spaces that they're dealing with a lot of the pressure from media, technology. And I realize some of these things are just part of being human, but some of them have been accentuated. And, you know, one of the things I've learned a lot about are wilderness programs, which I'm sure you know a lot about these, where a lot of parents, though, don't know these things exist, and they seem pretty extreme. Like, your kid has to be in a deeply problematic situation, and then they go away for 90 days. They're in the wilderness. They're learning how to take care of themselves. I get the principle of it, but to have a middle space between that extreme need to go away for 90 days to say, what if you spent a week and you went through this, or 2 weeks? Man, I just love it. And I love that you're creating it. It's a brand new thing that doesn't exist.
Yeah, thank you.
Gabe and I always talk about every kid needs a heart camp. I think it's just such a great idea to blend the two, play, process, reflection, because sometimes they're so isolated from each other. You have heart stuff and then you have camp and it's fun. Bring it together. I think it's brilliant. I think adults need heart camp too.
So talk a little bit about—
start an advisory board. You two need to be on it. These are great ideas.
I think as we look to the future of OnSite, you know, one of the dynamics is obviously these types of programs cost a lot of money. I mean, that's one of the cool things about how you guys have created a foundation that helps scholarship people so that the price doesn't become a challenge. But we just know it costs a lot of money to do these things really well and to have therapists and great spaces. I know as you look towards the future, you're trying to do even more about that. So not only is there this camp thing coming maybe in the future, but you're also trying to find more ways people can access this process and this journey. Tell us a little bit about what you're dreaming about there.
You can't deny the influence of the digital space with these last two generations. It's where they're engaging, where they're getting information. And I was hesitant and a bit skeptical looking at how you integrate mental health and therapy online. There's been other innovative companies that are well beyond that now that have been doing it for a while, and it's kind of exploding. So people have encouraged us to create some online workshops and digital courses at OnSite for years. And we were slow to do it because I couldn't quite figure out how to fully get the experience translatable so that it feels deep and connected and that it matters and it travels. Not that just we could sell it. I wasn't going to put something out there just because I thought we could market it. I want it to work. And so we've been really deep in study about how to do that. And thankfully, we've got Lindsay Nobles is an incredible leader, and she's bringing a lot of marketing and PR experience and things that I didn't necessarily have to the table and blending it with our rich therapeutic history. And we're going to do that. So next year, we're going to have digital offerings sometime this year. I believe it will, one, lower the price point. A lot of people don't have the means to be able to come, and the foundation can only support who it can support. And I just want to say this because I know we're out front. We decided to put ourselves out front maybe 3-4 years ago. Historically, we treated mental health like everybody else. We had this small service that we never marketed. And if you found it, then we hoped you wouldn't talk about it because we, at the end of the day, we're a business and no mission, no margin, no mission. And so we had to figure out how to do that. But then we thought we've got a bigger responsibility to reduce the stigma. And until I on site, we put ourselves out there on the main stage and say, we're here to talk about our service and what we know and what we value. But what's come with that is when a brand starts to trend, which I'm grateful that ours has, then people begin to see it as their one hope. Like, I need to come here. And I want you to hear that we are just one resource. And in the grand scale of things, we're a small resource. It's a great resource, but there are a lot of great resources in your community. And whether ours works for you, great. If it doesn't, call us anyway, and we'll help you connect the dots to make sure you get a good resource, because that's what everybody deserves.
So one last question. You know, we're in 2020, and it feels like culturally there's a lot more tensions people feel based on news, information, politics, especially in American life, that people are dealing with just more stress that they seem to be carrying and less spaces where they feel freedom to talk with one another, to hear opinions, to process that. When you look at kind of that macro level, I mean, are you sensing a similar thing that as it relates to therapy, as it relates to the conversations you're driving, that some of this outside noise that we let in through what we're reading, listening to, the news, so on and so forth, is that one more just contributing pressure and factor and stress that people are carrying today that maybe we didn't carry 50 years ago?
I think it's beyond one more. I think it is the contributing factor. I put a lot of emphasis on that, and I deal with it too. I mean, I try to keep up with what's current because I end up speaking into or getting calls if they're the latest mass shooting or whatever is going on in the news and media. Often I'll get a call about that to try to help in some way, offer counsel or resources. And I'm not immune to the stress of that. I experience secondary and vicarious trauma from all the stuff that I take on. I think what's different is that I'm intentional about having an outlet and safe people to process that with. And that's not naturally built in to our ecosystem, either spiritually or emotionally. And I think that's what we're trying to change with people who you guys have a great platform to deliver wonderful content. You're intentional about talking about real things, deep things, mental health, spiritual health. I believe we're in need of a paradigm shift within our ecosystem in order to combat what is a wave of what I believe is stress, more so than we've ever seen it. It's kind of everywhere and it's moving fast, and I experience and other people experience it, but it doesn't have to define us when we get intentional about how we can show up and do it differently.
Well, and part of that intentionality is what you and Bob did. You both said, hey, I don't have very many friends that I would actually call close friends, and you changed it. And I think for a lot of us, we feel that same. I think, what is the number? I think it's 46% have high feelings of loneliness. So we're almost at 50% of a loneliness epidemic right now. So that all this consumption you're getting of stressful things, you literally have no outlet to take those stressors to. No person who really knows you that you could be vulnerable with and say, this is how this is affecting me. I don't have a place or a category to put it. And so I just want to encourage you listeners who are going, this is wonderful, I want all the information from on-site. Whether or not you attend and or get on an online platform down the road, know that the action you can take right now is to just do what Miles and Bob did. Like, find the person that you can be vulnerable with and just say, hey, I want to be accountable to you because I'm either taking on too much that I have no resolution for. I have no way out or know how to solve it. And the burden is becoming more than I can handle. And just by exhaling that sentence, you know, all of a sudden that stress lessens by knowing this isn't the end of your story and you're not alone. And I find that so often on the road, I talk to people who are like, how do you find friendships? I mean, truly, it's baffling for so many people. Like, I can't find real friendships now because it's been displaced by faux community, which is online. It doesn't matter how savvy our iPhones become, they will never replace the role of a human. And we have got to put them down and go find people in our neighborhood, our church, our schools, our communities, and just say, hey, anybody else want to start meeting? I don't care if it's like three of us or five of us, but I'm willing to invest in this because I know that we're going to obviously be more holistic in our healing when we're doing it with someone else.
Thank you, Miles, for what you do. Thanks for spending time helping just our listeners better understand how to enter into some of these conversations. And we're cheering you guys on and excited to see all of the new things that are coming from you just living on purpose.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. And my main hope is that this conversation gets humanized in some way and this becomes a natural rhythm of our lives. I hope I work myself right out of a profession and we get to do this in our living rooms.
Thanks, Miles. Wasn't that great? I know I was encouraged just to hear it. And anytime we have therapists or counselors or anyone that speaks into our mental health, we want to make sure you share it with your friends because we know this is beneficial to anyone who listens.
Yeah. So thanks for listening to this. I want to remind you, if you want to take advantage of getting the Living Centered Workshop online, it's the 4-day workshop. There's a giveaway today at Rebecca Lyons on Instagram. You can invite friends into that and also invite friends to continue to be a part of this growing community of Rhythms for Life. We love doing this with you. We love having these conversations, but this is the moment. If you've got friends out there who you know are struggling right now and they're trying to make sense of how to live in a better way, this is such a great way, I think, for them to feel more purposeful and have insight into what they were meant for.
And even if you don't win the giveaway, just know that it's still available to you online. Anyone who hears this and wants to dig deeper, it's at onsiteworkshops.com.